I hope people can hear me now. Great, thank you. Okay, so the plan for today is to continue with set theory notation, in particular to look at products and families. And once we're done with that, we're going to get to one of the more beautiful proof techniques, the one technique really that remains, which is induction. But that I may have time for a quick example today, but probably not. And so probably we'll start that on Wednesday. Okay, so but for today, more set notation. And of course, you should bear in mind what we had last time, that there's a pretty strong analogy between the set notation and that of prepositional logic. Okay, so today we're going to talk about, as I said, two things. So first, products, and then families. Yeah, so I actually started school under the regime of the new math, which decided that all children should learn math via set theory. So we were taught how to multiply numbers by counting elements of product sets back in kindergarten. But I don't think that's standard now. But in any case, we will talk about the product sets right now. So definition. If we have two sets, then the product which is denoted A cross B and we call it the product set. And it's just the set of all pairs with one from A and the other from B. So A, little a is in big A, and little b is in big B. Okay, so it's a now, let me just give a quick example and then let you try to see whether we can prove a theorem using it. Okay, so if we take the set 1, comma 2 to be the first one, and then the set, say, 2, comma 3 to be the second one, okay, so if we just follow this, first of all, is it clear how many objects will be in this product set? Exactly, right? So it's going to be pairs, and there's going to be the product of the number in the two. So the first one, well, actually, sorry, not ordered, but the collection includes 1, comma 2, and 1, comma 3, and 2, comma 2, and 2, comma 3. Okay, so I hope that's clear. So I hope the notation is clear. So that's that it needs to be a product set. Okay, and for clarity, let's just try the following question, and maybe I'll example. And let's do our usual thing of write down two things. One is true, one is false. You should figure out which is true and which is false. So which is true? Okay, and our usual plan will be to prove the true one and to find a counterexample for the false one. Okay, so prove the true one and find a counterexample for the other. Okay, that's good. Anyway, so what are the two statements? So the statements are, for all quadruples of sets, so A, B, C, and D sets, try to use capital letters typically to mean sets. Okay, so then the statements that I want are A cross B, because we're doing products, union with C cross D is contained in A union C cross B union D. That's one statement. And the other one is going to be exactly the same statement, except I want the containment to go the other way. Okay, so is it clear what these two statements are? Okay, so, that is B union D, yes. Okay, so it's not that clear. Let me write it here. But yes, that's B union D. All right, let's see. And so does anyone see which is true? Or since I told you one is true and one is false, it would be enough to see if one is false. Okay, well, maybe I'll try drawing a trick. The first one is true, that's correct. So the answer to the first one is true. Okay, and so then the second thing we were asked to do is find a counterexample and prove. So prove and find a counterexample, those two things. And so the usual approach is the usual approach, as always, from section 1.7, which you should read often. And that is the first thing to do is to try to understand what's going on. And to do that, we will try to draw a picture, which is similar to the Venn diagrams, except with products. And there's a nice way to draw those. So let me start with that. So the understanding part. And that's to draw a square, and I have my two sets, say A and my set C here, and then I have my two sets B and D over here. Okay, and so this box is supposed to represent the product. So if I take this box, okay, and let me just try over here. Let me use different colors so that it's hopefully clearer what's going on. So I'm going to take the ones that come up here are A cross B, and I'll use three different colors, and C cross D, and union C. That's invisible. Union C. Across B union D. So those are the three sets that come up there. Okay, so let's see. So how many of these regions, of these nine regions here, are involved in this A cross B? Is that clear? Exactly, it's these four regions right here. Right, so that's A cross B. So that's how my figure works. So let me just fill it in. So as suggested, this one here is this collection of four boxes is A cross B, and this collection of four boxes then is C cross D. And the whole thing is A union C cross B union D. Okay, and so you can see from this little picture that the red union, the blue is contained in the green, but not the other way around. Okay, so that's the okay, and so. So let's start with the easier direction. Let's try to build a counterexample. So if I want to build a counterexample to this second one, what would be the smallest counterexample that I could build? Or actually any counterexample, but eventually I'd like the smallest one. So is it clear how I would use this figure to build a counterexample?
Could I, if like A was a set of one and two, B was three, C was four, D was five, oh, sorry, then A cross B is 2, 3, and oh, not wait. Yeah, 1, 3 and 2, 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then C cross D is 4, 5.
Mm-hmm.
But the other way around, like
this green one, you mean?
Yeah, the union.
Mm-hmm.
A union C cross B union D.
Mm-hmm.
That would be.
Well, maybe we can just see how big it is, how many things are in there.
Three, two, six? No.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Six?
Yep. Exactly. So that's a good example. Uh-huh. So does that make sense, everyone?
Is that the smallest one, or is there?
Nope, it's not. So can anyone find a smaller one?
Could you just take out the two from A?
Yep, that's a good start.
Okay.
So that'll make it smaller. If we erase. I'm going to write some cross out the two. Okay, so then we'll lose this one, and this one, and this one. But it's still true that the union of the two products, oops, the union of the two products has only two elements, and the product of the unions has four, so they can't have the containment, right? I claim that I can make it even a little bit smaller. Actually, let me try it down here. So if I draw that example down in my here example down here, I have A and B. A has got these two elements, and C has got one element, which is not in A. And B and D have each got one element. So when I draw the product, I have two elements in that red box, one in that one. I have one down here and two over here, right? So that's what it looks like. I have those six dots in my grid. Yes. One is a subset, one is a superset. Yeah. Okay, and let's see, we got rid of the two, so we made it a little bit smaller. So now we have four. So how can I make it even a little bit smaller? This is a little bit tricky. Yeah, I can make one an empty set, and then it's even smaller. Okay. So let's say I make one of them into the empty set. So maybe A here. So then there's no one there. And so then this one's gone, and this one's gone, and this one's gone. And so now A cross B is the empty set. Okay. But again, there's only one total element here, and there's two here. So there, we still don't have that right containment. Okay, am I at the smallest possible counterexample? So now over in this picture, I'm down to just two dots, right? I have one, I made A empty. So I have a dot down here and I have a dot up here. Ah, very good question, and I think we've seen the answer here. Let's just try that. So psi if I take the empty set cross the singleton 3, what is that? So if we look over here at our definition, it's a set of all A comma B such that A is in the empty set and B is in B. All right. And that is the empty set, right? There are no such elements. And we saw that in this example up here because we found that we eliminated all the bits from A, and eventually, you know, this one had to go away because one's no longer in A, and this one had to go away because two's no longer in A. So there's nothing left to be in A cross B, right? Even though B is non-empty. Okay, so that's worth mentioning and certainly something to think about. It's a little bit confusing. So it's a note that for any set A or B, if I take the empty set and take its product with B, this is just equal to the empty set. Oops. And notice that makes sense from the perspective. How could I get something like empty comma 3? What product would I have to take to get empty comma 3 to be in the product? How could I get a product that looks like this?
Maybe the empty set crossed with the power set of B.
Okay. Let me write it. To get this pair, let me run through my reasoning. So to get this pair, I need to have this be an element of the second set, right? I must have that an element, right? And I must have this object be an element of the first set, okay? So it must be a set that contains the empty set, not the empty set itself, but a set that contains it. So it has to look something like, here's my set, and it contains the empty set, and the second one has to contain the number 3. Does that make sense? Okay. Actually, let's make one more little note. What's the size of the product set? Let's say A has little a elements, and B has little B elements. The product has how many? Yeah, and as someone pointed out, that's exactly the key point. This is different from the empty set. In particular, it has a different number of elements, right? Because this set has one element, and the empty set has zero elements. So it's you can tell it apart just by how many elements it has. And you're exactly correct. It has A times B elements. Right, and as I said, that was how they tried to introduce multiplying integers to us. But anyway, that was how they tried to do it. And the point is that that this is true. And this works, right? So if we take the empty set has zero elements. So this is saying that zero times B is equal to zero, which is right. That's what we would have expected to find. So that's consistent. Okay, yeah, so that was are there any further questions about how the empty set plays into the product construction? Okay, so then we were almost done finding the smallest example. So can I keep shrinking this example any further and still get a counterexample? So we're down to just these two points over here now. And which one is causing the problem? Right, we're trying to say that the red union the blue is exactly. It's that 4, 3. So can I keep the 4, 3 and get rid of the other one and make an even smaller counterexample? Yes, and how would I do it?
You can make C empty. C or D?
D, empty. Yeah, D. D is the one. Right, so I want to make D empty, and then it'll work. That's right. And so, so I can make one more empty. So if I make D empty, then we're going to lose this this one, and we're going to lose this one. Okay, so now this set still has one element in it. This 4, 3, this one here. But it's not contained in the union because that union is empty. So in this example, once we get all these things erased, then we're down to cross B is equal to a C cross D is equal to the empty set, but a union C cross B union D is not empty. It's equal to the singleton 4, 3, just making it smaller because I have all that mess there that I crossed out.
Professor, I have a question.
Yep.
So wouldn't that mean that A cross B union C cross D is not equal to the union?
Mm-hmm.
A?
Yes. And
A union C.
Yes, it's not. And you can see that in several ways. So if you look at this diagram, right, so this is A cross B, and this is C cross D, and we're missing these corners, right? So that set is typically smaller than the product of the union. And that's what we're seeing here. This A cross B has, this A cross B has nothing in it, and neither does the C cross D, but the union has the product of the unions, because this union has one thing in it and that union has one thing in it, so the product of the union has one thing in it.
So would the first statement be false too?
No, because this one is now empty, union empty, contained in this singleton.
Yeah, it's but the singleton, does that include the empty set? So
yes. So remember the other fun and useful fact about the empty sets is that if A for any set B, the empty set is always contained in any set. It's always a subset of B for any set B. Remember what it means. It's kind of a vacuous statement, so it's kind of fun to think through the logic. To be a subset means that every element of this empty set is also contained in B. Well, there aren't any elements, so it's a vacuous check.
So in that example where we had empty comma three, the empty has to be explicitly set, like stated to be in that set to get empty comma three.
Yeah, that's right. So see, this set is quite different from the empty set because this set has one element and the empty set has zero elements. It happens that the one element of this set is oddly the empty set itself. But from the perspective of this set, it's just a set that has one element. It's a kind of odd element for it to have, but it's a set with one element in it. Whereas the empty set, this one, is a set with zero elements in it.
Okay. That makes sense. That's just a little funny. Okay.
It is a little funny, but that's what it is. Yeah. Okay, other questions about how the empty set works? Yeah, so the phrasing in the chat is correct. Way to say what that set is. Okay, so those are products. All right, so then let's go through and write down a proof for the one that is true, and then move on to families. All right, so so this first statement here, just copying. So A, B, C, and D sets. And then we have that A cross B union C cross D is contained in. Okay, let me write that a little bigger. It's just hard to read. Anyway, I'm just going to write it again. A cross B union C cross D. Is contained in A union C cross B union D. Okay, and let's see. So over here, we're gonna do our scratch work as usual. And we already did the first part of it. We did the understanding bit, which is drawing this picture and seeing that sure enough, this red union that blue is contained in that bigger square. Okay, and that's the observation that we need to make. So that's true. And so we expect to be able to prove it. Okay, and so then the next thing is to figure out the logic. And it's kind of instructive, I think, to think about how this logic works. So if we think about the logic of applying this set, to have an element that's in something here, union something there, is that an and or an or statement?
That'd be an or statement.
Exactly. And the easy way to remember that is that it looks a lot like a little or. And that means that either we're in this A cross B or we're in there. So that's what our logic looks like. So logic, if X comma Y is in A cross B or X comma Y is in C cross D. Okay, so that's what we're assuming here. And then we want the outcome here. Then X comma Y is in A union C cross B union D. Okay, so if we're trying to prove a statement like this, we have a P or a Q implies an R. What does that amount to? Well, there are two separate things that we have to prove. So if this is a proposition P here, and this is a proposition Q, and this is a proposition R, So we need to show, let me go to the next step here. So we assume, okay, if I want to show that either either P or Q implies R, I claim that I need to show, first of all, that if P is true, then R is true. Assume P and show, conclude R. And then separately, we have to assume Q and conclude R. So is it clear that that's the logic that we have to go through? So we assume that that first one, and then use this one here, and then prove R, and then we assume the second one and prove R. Okay, so that's our logic. Okay, and then we just have to go through and do it, and it's actually not that hard once you see the logic, so let's just start writing out the proof. So proof. All right, so we assume this P, so X comma Y is in A cross B. All right, so what does that tell us? So X is in A and Y is in B, that's what it means. Okay, but hence, since A is contained in A union C and B is contained in B union D, we also have X is contained in A union C and Y is contained in B union D. Therefore, we're done. And X comma Y is contained in, maybe I'll write it with words, is in this product A union C across B union D. So that's sort of meant to be inside the product. Was it each, the first was in the first and the second was in the second, which is true. Okay. So if X comma Y is in B C cross D, then similarly X comma Y is in A union C across B. Okay, so any questions about that?
So when we say A is in A union C, that's we get that from the picture, right?
Oh, let's see. So the picture should inform you, but not the reader, because the reader doesn't get to see the picture, right? So
okay.
Yeah. So I'm using the fact that A is always contained in A union anything.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah. Other questions? Okay. So then the next thing I wanted to do was families, which is just another bit of notation, really. And it's just a name for sets of sets. So sets or families or collections, these all just mean the same thing of sets. And actually, they come up quite a bit. That's the kind of thing this is. This is a set of sets, right? And it's a set of the singleton empty set. So that's the kind of thing we're actually going to be looking at now. All right, and let me just do a few examples. And with it, the type of, there are two ways that we tend to indicate these notationally. And let me do two examples, and each one I'll write in two different ways. So hopefully that'll clarify the notation. So often I try to use like a script letter to indicate a family of sets. And so maybe I have something like, I could just explicitly list them. So maybe the set 1, 2, 3 is one of my elements. And the set 2, 3, 4, and let's say it's got three elements, and the third one is the set 3, 4, 5. Okay, so that's one set. And the other way to notate this would be as an indexed family. And to do that, we might name these. So let's say that this one here is called A1. And AA, say, and this one here is called A sub B, and this one here is called A sub C. Those are just their names, all right? And we can write delta for the set of names that we have. So the names that I had were A, B, and C, okay? So those are the set of names. Okay, then we could also rewrite this script A in a different way. It's the set of all things, sets of the form A sub alpha, such that alpha is in my set delta. Which at this point doesn't look easier, but in fact it turns out often that it is, because it's often easier to get your hands on what this delta is than the other. But in any case, are there any questions about why those are the same thing? Ways to write that set of set. And let me do one more example where there are infinitely many sets, which is also common. So I'll take B to be, and I'll again write it in two different ways. So one is it's the set of intervals, closed intervals from x to x plus 3, so intervals of length 3. Such that my x is between 0 inclusive and a 2 exclusive. Okay, so it's bigger than or equal to 0 and strictly smaller than 2. So that's my list. So I hope it's clear what this means. So this is an infinite collection of sets, each of which is an interval, right? But they're all of length 2 and there are infinitely many of them. Okay, I'm sorry, they're length 3. I don't know why I said 2. Anyway, they're length 3 and there are infinitely many of them, right? All right, but I can also write them as I did above. So this is equal to, so I want to write it just like this. So it's going to be the set of all B sub X, such that X is in an alpha, sorry, I'm going to write just like I did above. B sub alpha, such that alpha is in my delta. Yep, okay, so now if I want to make that work, is it clear what delta should, well, either one. So can anyone tell me either what this delta should be to make these the same thing, or what B sub alpha should be?
Maybe the delta is the range x to x plus 3.
Okay. Yeah. So actually, that's this one. Yeah. So then, B sub alpha should be, as you say, the range from alpha to alpha plus 3. Okay. So these are the sets, right? So B alpha is one of the sets in my collection, just like A alpha is one of the sets in my collection. Okay. So these are the sets that live there in my collection. Okay. And so then what are the possible alphas?
Oh, then that would be x is greater than or equal to 0 and less than 2.
Exactly. Okay, so those are my possible alphas. So does that make sense? So this is my, for names, let me give some names to these things. So this is the indexing set. Just like up here, indexing set. Okay, because they're the indices for my for the elements of my family. Okay, let me try a few computations with these just so you can, it's clear with how these examples work. And there are basically two things that we're going to do with these, and that's to take the union and the intersection. All right, so notation. So we can take the union. So if we have a family, script A is a family of sets, then we write the union over all the A, where A is in A for the union, which means, okay, to tell you what set is, I have to tell you how to tell if an element is in there. So X is in the union . Okay, so I hope it's clear what that would mean. So I'm trying to take a union. And so if I union, I got these sets, and I want to take a union, how do I tell if I have an element X that's inside of a union? I need a quantifier, existential or universal. Existential, that is correct. I just have to find any one of these A's that contains it, and then it's in the union. Okay, so to write it out carefully, I would say if and only if there exists A in A with X contained in that set A. Okay, and similarly, if A equal the set of all A sub alpha such that alphas and deltas is an index family of sets. Then X is in the union over all alpha and delta of A sub alpha, we can write this time. So that's how you write out the notation. And again, if and only if, and it's the same quantifier, existential, this time if there exists some alpha and delta with X in A alpha. Okay, so with that notation, let's just try these two examples. Example. Let me call these, remember these. So let me call this example one here and this example two. All right, so example one. All right, so what is this union? And again, I can write it either way. So let me write it both ways. So this is over all A in the script A of A, or I could write it as the union over alpha in my delta, the delta ABC of A sub alpha. Okay, so what is that? Is that clear? So I'm back over in this example. So the idea is that X is in this if it's in any one of them. Write out the answer. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. So does that make sense? So so this is the union of these three sets. That's what I want to do. I want to take the union of those three sets, and that's what this is supposed to be telling me. Those are the three sets, right? And I'm taking the union of all three of them. Or these are the sets, And I'm taking the union of all three of them. There's one, there's the other, and there's the other. So the union is 1 through 5. Okay, well, let's see if that made sense by looking at the next example. So 2. Let's take the union of all B in this script B of B, or if we wanted to write it in indexed notation, the union for alpha in my indexing set, which is the closed interval from 0 to 2, an infinite set of this B sub alpha is equal to. Okay, let's see what set I would get.
Would it be the x and the x plus 3?
Well, what I want to do is I want to take the union. So if I just start taking the union, it depends. It involves all the x's, so the x's need to go away in the end. I need to actually get a set. So I can take x equal to 0. So then I'll get 0 comma 3. So that's going to be in there, right? And then I'm going to take the interval 0.1 to 3.1, and I have to get all of the x's that I can put in. So it's going to be some set of real numbers. So I have the interval from 0 to 3, and I have the interval from 0.1 to 3.1, and I have all of these intervals, and I'm just taking their union. Oh, I see it. Yeah, people are getting the answer over here correctly. So it's going to start at 0, right, and go up to 5, but we won't be able to get to 5 because we're not allowed to go all the way to 2, right? So it's going to be exactly as written in the chat box, the closed interval at 0 and the open interval at 5. So all the numbers between 0 and 5. And again, we're getting that by taking this union of all these length 3 intervals. So just to finish this off, there's a similar notation, of course, for intersection. I hope it's clear how that would go. So a definition, the intersection over A and A of A contains X, if and only if. Well, if I wanted the intersection, which quantifier will I end up using?
For all.
Exactly. So for all A in A, we have X in A. And similarly, of course, there's an indexed version. So X is in the intersection over alpha in my indexing set delta of A sub alpha, if and only if. And once again, it's going to be the same quantifier. For all alpha in my delta, we have X in A sub alpha. So it's very similar to above, except we switch quantifiers. Okay, so then we can finally do this. These two examples here. So if I go back to these examples, say 1 and 2, what would be their intersection instead of their union? So again, there are two ways to write it. Is that clear? I see the right answer. So it's got to be something that's in here and here and here. That's our goal, right? So just the things in all of those. And as pointed out in the chat, that's exactly this singleton set containing the element 3. And so then there's one more. So what about this last one? For the B's. So it's going to again be some collection of real numbers. And they should be ones that are in every one of these sets. So I would start by looking at the bottom one here runs from 0 up to 3. And then we can, and the highest one is going to be something that looks like, say, 2 minus a little bit up to 5 minus a little bit. Yeah, so I see it in the answer there. Yeah, so we can get, so the number 2 is in every single one of them, as is the number 3 and everything in between. Okay, so I claim that the answer is the closed interval 2, 3. All right, as written correctly in the chat there. Thanks, John. And so I'm out of time. But in any case, you should make sure that you understand that those are the correct answers. And I will stick around to answer questions.